Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now. We're going around the country 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. It's called the 2 minute drill. By the way, I will remind you that our golf tournament is coming up, but the spots are going fast. I've mentioned it a couple of times today. I want to give you another chance. If you're just getting into your car, ducking out of work a little bit early, the golf tournament, the 810 Listener Golf Tournament, is coming up on Monday, September 9th. It's at the Deuce at the National. Register at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. shotgun start. For only $108.10, you get your golf, your car rental, cart rental. I don't know why I keep saying car, because you're not going to drive a car around the Deuce. Cart rental, drink tickets, breakfast, and lunch from Hereford House, plus say a goodie bag and tons of great hole prizes. Space is limited, so make sure you register right now at 810WHB.com. That's 810WHB.com. I will see you at the Deuce at the National on September 9th for our 810 Listener Golf Tournament. Let's get things started here on the drill. We'll begin in Dallas, Texas. That's where our buddy Ari Temkin is, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Ari, how are you, sir?
I'm great, sir, and how are you?
Doing well, doing well. Let's talk about Zeke being upset because Jerry Jones said, Zeke who? Where are we on this? I thought when Zeke Elliott was reported to have come back from Mexico to Dallas that maybe that was a sign that they were getting close to getting things done. Where does it stand now between the Cowboys and Jerry Jones and their star running back?
Yeah, and Jerry clearly said that tongue-in-cheek. I think so much of what we're hearing publicly is just part of both sides to play, one side against the other. And look, in the case of Zeke, he wants a new deal. He doesn't want to report until he gets a new deal, but he doesn't have much leverage because if he doesn't play in at least six games this season, then he's doesn't get the full credit for the season, and this contract situation he has just perpetuates itself. So, Zeke is justified to a certain degree because the Cowboys do intend on running him into the ground and over the next couple of years while he's still under contract, and then, in ensuing years with the franchise tag. So he's trying to use the leverage that he has, but, this sort of comes down to how the current Cowboys organization views the running back position. Obviously, the importance of it has been diminished pretty substantially by a lot of some of the advanced analytics and whatnot. So, look, Zeke's a great player, but, it kind of depends on how much the Cowboys value the running back position, relative to Zeke Elliott. And, I don't know that they, put a true value on it like, a $19 million a year running back should for the organization. So I don't think they want to, if they don't have to, give him a new deal. Now, if they have to, they might be forced into it, and maybe at a number that they can swallow more than, around $17-18 million, whatever he wants, he can command in the open market. But I just don't see how you can justify paying that to a running back in the modern era, even if that running back is as good as Zeke Elliott is.
Yeah, I'm with you. But what about the number that Dak Prescott's looking for? Turning down $30 million, wanting $40 million? Come on. 22 touchdowns? Let's relax on Dak Prescott. I mean, where do we sit now on the latest with where they are on Dak Prescott?
Yeah, look, everything that I heard, Turin, indicated that Dak was going to have a deal in place by the time training camp started, and obviously that didn't happen. And so I think a big reason for that is because the Cowboys probably felt like anything between $30 and $32 million a year and this deal would get done. And obviously, that's not the case here. Now, I don't know if he's asked for 40 or if he's asked for 35 plus, but the Cowboys can franchise tag him next year at around $32 million, and then can franchise tag him again at $38 million. So, look, they're pretty comfortable that even if they don't get this long-term deal done soon, that they can still hold on to him over the next couple of years and pay him less than what is reported to have already asked for. So, if the Cowboys are in a position where if they could have gotten him on the cheap, quote-unquote, they should have and they want to, but since they're not going to be able to, they're going to let this thing play out and kind of force Dak Prescott to show that he can be a franchise-type quarterback, because that's the biggest question mark when it comes to him. We know there's the skill and ability there, but, it depends on who you talk to. He can rank anywhere between 14th and 18th best quarterback in the league, And so he's got to take a major leap forward this year in Kellen Moore's offense to prove and justify that he should be one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And the Cowboys were willing to pay him at that rate on a lower end, albeit, without really knowing for sure. But now that he's, you know, he's forced the Cowboys' hand to a certain degree by asking for upwards of $35 to $40 million, and the Cowboys are going to let it play out.
Yeah. Listen, they're smart. You don't think the only thing that could blow up in their face is if he would walk out, right? You don't see any chances of him just walking out of it. Like, because if he had the same mindset, hey, we're going to get it done, and they didn't get it done, he's not going to turn around and walk out of camp, right? He'll play and then go for those huge franchise tag numbers next year and the year after, right?
Yeah, I mean, Serene, this is a guy that's made basically, you know, the bare minimum as a quarterback in the league and has made close to $10 million the last couple of years on a per-year basis in endorsements. He knows the value of being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. It's brought him a ton of money and endorsements and will continue to. And look, obviously being a quarterback, you know, that's line one for getting endorsement deals and all those sponsorship deals. But quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys obviously comes with a greater demand for that. So, yeah, I would imagine Dak understands that the value of being the quarterback of the Cowboys won't take that for granted, and we'll see how contentious these negotiations get. But I do know the Cowboys are way more sold on Dak Prescott than they are on Zeke Elliott. And obviously that sounds stupid to say because Zeke is arguably the best player at his position, but they're more sold on Dak being a franchise quarterback than they are in paying a running back $17, $18 million annually.
Yeah. All right. That sounds fair. Let's talk about the Texas Longhorns. Polls come out. They're very highly thought of. And then they've got some off-the-field issues. Josh Moore, the Texas wide receiver, weapons charges. What's your vibe? I mean, I don't know that you got anything to add to that story on what it is, but are they really as focused on the season at hand? And I think they're grossly overrated, to be honest with you. I've got them at number 18 with my vote in the AP poll. Do you think that they're really ready to have the kind of accolades heaped on them that they're getting when you got this kind of shenanigans going on right now off the field?
Look, I think your pessimism is somewhat warranted, you know, and maybe this is partly just them being a little bit overbaked or overcooked here when it comes to their national attention. They do have a really explosive offense, you know, with Colin Johnson on the outside and, you know, Jordan Whittington, a true freshman running back who just looks like an absolute monster so far, and Keontae Ingram in their backfield coming back in his sophomore year, and the offensive line they have, Zach Shackelford. I mean, and then, of course, Sam Ellinger, quarterback. But this is a really explosive offense. I think the biggest question mark is their defense. And as much as we harp on and talk about that Oklahoma defense and all the question marks around it and you know, how bad it was last year, I think Texas, you know, people are sleeping on how bad that Texas defense could be, especially a linebacker. They lost Gary Johnson last year, who was a major contributor for them. And, you know, look, they are searching for those guys, and they're confident that they have guys to replace them. And, look, I buy it at least in their defensive line, but I think there's major question marks, especially in the back end of their defense and the linebacker, okay, course. So I'm curious to see how they fill that thing out, but I don't think there's any question their offense is going to be extremely explosive. To me, it just kind of comes down to, can their defense keep them in games, or is their defense going to be at a point like Oklahoma's has been in the recent history?
All right, Temkin, 105.3 The Fan and the Big 12 Network on Sirius. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it, man. Have a great week.
Take care, Serene.
New York, New York.
Dan Schwartzman, NBC Sports in New York City, is next. Dan, how are you, sir?
Great, Serene. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Adam Gase loses Avery Williamson, this after keeping him out on the field for a couple more series than everybody else. Listen, we know what kind of a goof fest he looked like during the press conference. Is this a guy that absolutely is staring at floating tacos during the game?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, you got to remember, Avery Williamson is switching linebacker positions with the addition of C.J. Mosley, so they want to get him extra snaps so he gets more acclimated to his new role. But that said, I mean, you know, it's not uncommon for some veterans to be playing later in games. Matt Ryan was still in the game for the Atlanta Falcons at that point. So I don't think it's crazy that a linebacker is still in the game in the second quarter when the starting quarterback of a multiple Pro Bowl guy who's been a league MVP is still the quarterback of the opposing team. So I think he's getting a bad rap here, Seren, for honestly the wrong reasons.
Has he earned getting a good rap, though?
I don't see why not. I mean, you know, look, the Miami Dolphins was a poop show. I think that's a proper way to call it. They went 10-6 his first year. Look at the quarterback situation that he was dealt with. They had to bring Jay Cutler out of retirement in the Fox booth. He had, Ryan Tannehill, had to try to make that work. But, you know, he got the most out of Cutler in Chicago, had a great run with Peyton Manning in Denver. So, I think Adam Gase gets a bad rap because he has those bug eyes and seems a little quacky. But you know what? I think Adam Gase, there's no reason not to think that the Jets could be successful with him this year. He's done everything right in camp. And so far, the reports have come in that people think that he, seems to have control over his team.
Are you a believer that Sam Darnold is going to be a franchise quarterback? When I say franchise, Ryan Tannehill was called a franchise quarterback. We just heard your interpretation of what he had in Ryan Tannehill down there in Miami. When I say franchise quarterback, I mean a guy that's going to the Pro Bowl year after year after year and is targeting the Hall of Fame as an end result of his career. Is he that kind of quarterback?
I think he can be, yes. I do think, and look, it's preseason, but he's looked so much more mature. The game seems to have slowed down, Seren, in front of his face. He's making much smarter decisions. The guy clearly is a leader. He has the respect of his team. He can make a lot of throws. I mean, Sam Darnold is a better athlete than I think people gave him credit for. He's as good a scrambler as you're going to find. He can make things happen with his legs. I think Sam Darnold has a great opportunity to be that franchise quarterback, something the Jets haven't had since Joe Willie Namath, frankly. So I am cautiously optimistic as a Jets fan and also as a football fan. I do think the attributes are there. And really, he should take some major steps forward this year.
All right, two back. That's the New York Mets right now. We saw them here in Kansas City. Pete Alonso continues to pound home runs, now setting a new NL rookie record with 40. Look, you were the one that tipped us off to the fact that don't get too excited about the Mets and their 8-game winning streak because they were playing all bottom feeders. Of course, Royals are a bottom feeder as well. What do you think? I mean, are they a real contender for this, or are they just beating up on the little sisters of the poor and their comeuppance is going to happen here over the last 6 weeks?
Yeah, I think they were beating up on the little sisters of the poor. And by the way, if anybody does go to that school, I apologize for ripping it. But they played, what, Pittsburgh 6 times? They played the White Sox 3 times, the Marlins 4 times. You know, the Nationals without a Max Scherzer in there. Then they lose to Atlanta 2 out of 3. They beat, no offense, the Kansas City Royals, who are god-awful. Now it's the comeuppance when they play Cleveland for 3, Atlanta for 3, the Cubs for 3, the Phillies for 3, the Nationals with Scherzer back for 3, back to the Phillies. If the Mets want to show that they're, obviously better than better than what they've been against these bad teams, then do it now because they were favorites, Ren. And I think 14 of 15 games they were favored. They should be winning those games against those cupcakes.
All right, all of a sudden James Paxton is starting to win games for the New York Yankees and starting to look more like the guy he was for the Seattle Mariners. What's turned him in the right direction?
The second inning. I mean, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, Seren. His ERA in the first inning of games this year, no joke, over 11. Highest in Major League Baseball. Innings 2 through whenever he's taken out of the game, he's got a 2.98 ERA. He just cannot, for some reason, pitch well in the first inning. Gave up 2 runs in his last outing in the first inning. He's been saved by the fact the Yankees' offense is ridiculously great. The fact is they need James Paxton to be that ace pitcher. He does obviously exhibit great stuff. As long as he can get out of the first inning without giving up more than a run, he's pretty darn good. But something's got to give where he can't keep throwing 30 pitches in the first inning, giving up 2 or 3 runs, then settling down because it's not a recipe to win in the postseason.
Tom Glavine had that same kind of issue, early in his career when he was first getting going with the Mets, and he could limit it to 1, maybe 2, and then he would be lights out from then on. So maybe he can have that kind of success when he gets going. We've seen him not have problems in the first inning previous in his career, so I think there's a lot of reasons for Yankee fans to be quite optimistic about what he can do once he gets to the postseason. But they're going to need him. They're going to need one of the starters, certainly, to step up and be big time. We know that. Dan Schwartzman in New York, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
You as well, sir, and take care.
And I'm up in Chi-Town.
Talking to Mark Carmen, WGN in Chicago, Illinois. Mark, how are you, sir?
Seren, I'm excellent. Happy Monday.
Same to you, my friend. All right, where are you on the Cubs? Winning this division, winning a wild card. Where are they? We know you were the great defender of their skipper, Joe Maddon. Where do you sit on whether or not they're going to make the run over these last 6 weeks, either for the division or a wild card?
I am still on the Joe Maddon train and will be to the end, Seren. They are not a very good baseball team right now. They're incredibly inconsistent. You're talking about top of the lineup that hasn't looked good all season long. You got to talking about a back end of the bullpen that, yes, they got Craig Kimbrell back last night, but the dude's got an ERA over 6 in his 15 appearances now with the Cubs. He's given up 5 homers in 13 and a third innings. Is that good? I'm pretty sure it's not. But I do think that they still are the most talented team in the division. But it's going to come down to how they fare against the Cardinals. They play them seven more times. They finish the season with St. Louis. And the feeling around the team right now, you just can't really be confident that that's going to go well. But if I had to bet on a thread, I still got the Cubs in the playoffs.
Kimbrel back. You mentioned getting knocked around. Is that injury or is that rust? You know, it's been, you know, usually these guys who miss spring training and miss part of the year do not fare well. Early on, they were getting high marks for going out and making the Kimbrel move. What do you think they've got coming down the stretch?
I mean, it's never a good thing when you're losing 10 days to a knee injury. So I suppose he's not 100%. And then last night he couldn't get through the ninth inning because he threw, you know, 15 pitches before getting two outs, and Maddon came out to get him so he wouldn't overwork him. But I think that's a clear sign that he's not healthy. I go back all the way to 2016, sir, and they won the World Series. They traded for Aroldis Chapman, and he seemed happy here, but the Cubs didn't sign him. And he went back to the Yankees, and now they're paying Kimbrel $16 million, and Chapman's making $1 million more. And the Cubs have given up Soler to get Wade Davis, the whole thing. So that was just a big mistake by Theo.
Are we whistling by what's the bigger problem? And that's, look, even getting to them. I mean, their starting pitching is not fantastic. I mean, do you believe that a Yu Darvish or John Lester is suddenly going to rise up and blow people away for seven or eight innings and make the bullpen irrelevant?
I mean, it's small sample size right now, but those guys have all been red hot. It's more to me during the offense. They just don't score. You know, they'll put up seven, they put up two, and then one, and then two, and then one, and they'll bust out for 11. They have not been a consistent offense since Dexter Fowler left. Now, he hasn't exactly been great in St. Louis either, but they never filled that hole at the top, which was why they were interested in finding some leadoff guy this year but didn't want to pay the price to get it. So, to me, it's more, are they ever going to be consistent offensively? And right now, I mean, it's just impossible to imagine that Jason Hayward at the top is not the answer.
Nobody is getting more bets on them to win the Super Bowl than the Chicago Bears. Now, part of that is the price you get with them. It doesn't mean that they're everybody's pick. It means the money return you get is part of what's attracting them. What you've seen through two preseason games, are these smart or foolish wagers?
I mean, my take on that, it's mainly drunk Chicagoans who are just putting their money down on the Bears because they just have nothing else to do with their money, apparently. The Super Bowl is within reach, at least getting there in the NFC, I guess. But I'm not putting my money down on Mitchell Trubisky right now. The guy was ranked the 26th ranked quarterback by Pro Football Focus. I don't need to see the rankings. He's just not there yet. Now, is he going to make a huge leap from year two to year three? Maybe, but I don't see the skill set with him, Sarin, where he's actually going to get there. It's good that he can run the football. Everybody loves the play action pass nowadays, and Trubisky can do that. But I still think he's got a long way to go.
Yeah, I think he's going to have a good running game. I like Montgomery pounding away with the rock. I like Cohen as the secondary guy throwing the ball. I do like the pieces around him, and I like Matt Nagy as a coach.
You're bullish on the Bears, really?
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I'll bet them under, no doubt. I mean, I think this is stupid money going down on the Bears. It's absolutely ridiculous because I'm with you. I don't believe in Trubisky, but I think he can be propped up, and I think Matt Nagy's running the Chiefs' Alex Smith offense. And so when you got a lights-out defense, look, I may bet them under and they win 10 games and I lose. I think 9 or 9.5 is the number, if I'm not mistaken. I may very well lose on that. Because of that reason, because they can play great defensive football, but you got to have the quarterback that can spin it, not run it, spin it. I've watched this movie a lot of times. It's called Alex Smith Leads the Chiefs into a First Round Loss in the Playoffs. That's what it is. And I think that's maybe being optimistic on Trubisky. I know the Eric Eager from Pro Football Focus is going to be with us, and he gets beat up by Bears fans because he's pretty much said what you said. Like, Trubisky was lucky to get away with the numbers he got last year, and it'll be highly unlikely for him to be better this year unless he takes a major step forward growth-wise. He is still young enough to get better, but no, I'm not bullish on the Bears at all. I'm bullish on their D. I'm bullish on their coach. I'm bullish on some of the pieces around him, but I know where you go when you don't have – that next level quarterback, and Trubisky is not now, nor will he ever be that guy.
Yeah, all of what you just said is very fair, and Mitchell Trubisky hasn't reached Alex Smith territory yet. That'd be a step up.
Fair enough. Then I'm feeling good about my Bears under bet. Then again, I will tell you, I had the Rams under last year, so it's not that I'm foolproof. Yeah.
Right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's it. I'm headed to Vegas to make my bets, and the Bears under will be one of them.
9-7 all day, and yes, this is radio. We're not perfect. We make mistakes, and we pretty much know nothing. But we give our best every day, Sarin, to try to figure it out, right?
100%. 100%. We bring it big time every day. You always do, Mark. You're the best. Mark Harmon in Chicago. Great stuff, buddy. Have a great week.
Thanks, Ron. Be well.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Sarin Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Royals and Orioles tonight in Ballmer. He was the only pitcher to win at least 40 games for both the Royals and Orioles.
I was kicking around with Timmy. He didn't have anything. And he's pretty good, pretty darn good at baseball. People don't realize he's quite the baseball fan.
Oh, yeah.
Boddicker, of course, comes to mind as a guy who played for both, but he didn't get 40 wins with the Royals.
Mm-mm.
40 wins.
Boddicker, 13 for the Royals, 79 for the O's.
Yeah, 40 wins with the O's. And the Royals. Which team do you play for first?
Baltimore. Want the years?
Yeah.
07 to 11.
In Baltimore?
It was a Royal 12 to 15.
What the hell? From 12 to 15, somebody? Oh, Jeremy Guthrie.
Jeremy Guthrie. 41 for KC, 47 for Baltimore.
I guess because he came from the Rockies where it was not going well.
Right.
That I didn't think of that. Oh, I should have got that. That sucks.
Jay Guts.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. You know, the 180 room's a great spot for you guys. We just gave away Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, the 180 room. Great place to have an event, special party, reception, client meeting, corporate event. I got that great Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in a private dining room. Great atmosphere. Also, in addition to the BBQ, the chef-created sides, the desserts, full-service bar, all in an upscale location. That'll be great. Great atmosphere. Learn more about hosting an event at the 180 Room. Call 913-390-0180. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, always giving you a great spot to go hang out. And of course, Joe's on the way home. Not a bad idea. Joe'sKC.com to grab the phone number, whichever one you want to stop by and order a little takeout to take home tonight.
One of the things I've been doing here lately when I go to Joe's, I get something to eat for there or to take home. And then I also get a pound of the brisket. You can get it hot or you can get it cold. And it's awesome.
And you eat it
for,
all right there.
No, it's awesome for you. You chop it up and make roast beef sandwiches. It's the best roast beef sandwich you can possibly imagine. It's that perfectly done.
Oh, they do a great job.
Flavorful Joe's brisket.
Don't forget, if you're going to tailgate on a Sunday, get the Joe's on Saturday because they are off to give their employees a day off with the family. They love them some cheese football, too. But for Saturdays, for college football, and for Friday nights, for some high school football, Joe's KC, a great spot to go. Our thanks to all the guys on the 2-Minute Drill joining us there in the program. Eric Eager is going to be with us in the 5 o'clock hour. He's the data scientist for Pro Football Focus. If you're just getting into your car, the AP Top 25 is out. Clemson, Bama, Georgia, OU, and Ohio State, your top five. Three teams from the Big 12 in there. Oklahoma at 4, Texas at 10. Iowa State at 21. TCU, West Virginia, and Oklahoma State, and others receiving votes. SEC fans, Bama and Georgia, 2 and 3, as I mentioned. LSU at 6, Florida 8, A&M 12, Auburn 16, three schools, and the others receiving votes. And I'm sorry, Tiger fans, Mizzou just missing the top 25 at number 26, Mississippi State at 28, South Carolina at 35. OU has named Jalen Hurts the starting quarterback. That's a stunner. Didn't see that coming.
I did not. I thought for sure it would be, I don't know who the other
surprising turn of events. At some point, they got to lock and load one of their own, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of been transfer you, but I mean, I guess let me. That's a stupid statement. If you're Todd Lebo or another OU fan, OU rock, you're screaming like, why? Because having the number one overall pick and Heisman Trophy winner every year come from another school has been a problem. I say, fair point.
Do we really need to do that?
I just don't think it's going to keep happening.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That seems unsustainable long term. I mean, good player, but to get
greatest offensive mind in the history of college football if it never ends under Lincoln Riley.
I think it might be ending this year with Jalen Hurts.
I think so too. I'm not buying Jalen Hurts.
You have him six.
I have the Sooners six, which I think is a good spot. That ridiculous?
No, it's two spots lower than the poll, which means there's a lot of people that have them higher than you. So,
or a number two of spots.
People. Two spots. I'm not saying you're not. I'm not saying you're down, but you aren't as high on him. A little less high on him as some people. But
I've seen Jalen Hurts play well. I think he'll play well. I don't think he'll. What did Murray throw last year? How many touchdowns?
160. It was more than like I thought. Then went, oh, really?
Oh, the numbers were incredible. I just don't think you're going to see those numbers out of Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. Hang on.
40 something.
42.
Okay. How many picks?
Seven.
So, I mean, I think Hurts will stay away from the turnovers. And OU's really deep at running back.
And he ran for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns.
That's an important part of the equation.
54 touchdowns.
And that's okay. Hurts won't have to run for 1,000 yards because they've got two NFL day two running backs. I mean, running backs shouldn't normally go on day one, which is now only the first round. So top three round running backs. I mean, I think those guys are looking second and third-ish to me. Talented backs, but I got to see it a little bit more. I mean, why are we believing the defense is going to be any better?
Only because, you know,
they got a new DC, and he is saying, well, I don't like the safeties. I'm not seeing what I want to see. Now, is that coach speak? I think coaches say what they need to do, you know, when to try to motivate guys. So, but if you're OU, I mean, I don't want to hear about how, oh, we're going to be way better defensively. Well, you have nothing in recent years that would suggest such a thing.
So, other than the improbability of a power, you know, a traditional power being
a power recruiting school
being bad at defense, in a number of years in succession, at some point you think, well, that's got to end, right?
If they keep getting ranked highly in the recruiting, you would think, yes, at some point this has to turn. Yeah. Yes, I will grant you that, but
that ain't much to go.
But I've got them at six. I don't have them at 18.
Right.
Texas fans have got to burr.
Get a call from OU fans. What are you doing?
Where is Texas? Where did I say Texas was? Texas is at.
They are at 10. You have them at 18.
18.
Yeah.
So I'm probably eight spots lower than everybody else, and I'm what's dragging them down out of eight.
Matthew McConaughey on line two.
I've got the one that
hey,
I have.
Hey, man, what do you got them at 18 for?
If you're saying who do you got in front of Oklahoma to knock them down to six, I've got Michigan at four. Was that right?
Yes.
It's been a while since I put
frozen.
This in.
There we go. Michigan at four, yes.
And who's at five?
LSU.
LSU at five. Listen, I did not go into the research thinking I was going to put Ed Orgeron at five. Mm-hmm. But then you look and you go, oh, first round corner. Oh, first round safety. Oh, D-line, really good. Linebacker's good. I mean, they're really good. And then you look at the schedule and you're like, well, that kind of bodes well for them. Offensive line is good. Quarterback, they've got solid play at quarterback now. They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good, and I think they're going to be really good on defense. So, you know, Auburn's the one that they've got a hellacious schedule. I have Auburn at eight because I think they may very well be the eighth best team. And I tried to do this poll as a combination of what the team is, what the schedule is, but also – you know, what I think they are, if you're going to play a best of seven, I think Auburn is one of the 10 best teams in the country. They have a murderous schedule. They have a murderous schedule. Road games, tough draw out of the other side, having to play Auburn having to play Georgia on the other side is a tough one. I think they draw Florida, too, as well, maybe even in that. So it's a tough draw for Auburn, but I think they're going to be really good. I feel for Missouri. I had Missouri at 23. So I do feel bad that the Tigers didn't crack the top 25, particularly if they're not going to get their appeal heard and get a stay of execution on being able to fight for the division title. I did read a thing this weekend listed, and you can grab a phone line if you want, 913-3810-810. Hit me up on Twitter, at Soren Petro, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O. I did see a thing this weekend, and it was a best bets. And one of them was Missouri to win the East. And it wasn't that they were predicting Missouri to win the East. They're like, listen, Georgia is such a heavy favorite. There's no value in Georgia.
Right.
There's little value in Florida. And they think that if there's a team that could shock everyone to do it, it's the Missouri Tigers. They said that's if their appeal comes on board and you can actually get a bet down on the Tigers. Because they're not eligible to win the conference title if they're on probation. So I like Mizzou. I think Mizzou's going to be pretty good. I don't know how much if they don't get that appeal. Maybe that'll suck some of the life out of them. That'll be disappointing if it does. But I think the Tigers look pretty darn good.
2 years ago, if you had asked me what will Missouri be 2 years from now, I would have said they might be more of a basketball school than a football school. But it is not gone the way I think a lot of Missouri fans had thought. Because I was not very high on Odom initially or after his first season. And it looked like, you know, it was all set up with the Porters that Missouri was going to take a step and maybe challenge for the top half of the SEC. And things have not gone that direction at all. It was some strange, freak show coincidence or circumstances for both the Porter guys at Missouri. It did not go as planned, but other guys haven't been as good as they were advertised either.
I'm going to go to Kurt in a second, but we didn't get a chance to dig too deep with Grunty on this. Mecole Hardman, why is a guy who's worthy of a top 50 pick, what do you go, 51, just about top 50?
Something like that.
Almost top 50 pick, have less than 1,000 yards receiving at Georgia in his whole career? They pound the rock.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it, but, you know, and listen, I'm not here to run down Hardman. He's done everything you could ask him to do in the preseason game and the limited snaps he's gotten. I'm asking what's wrong at Georgia. And that's more like, do they pound the rock to a fault and they need to open up the offense? I mean, Nick Saban really just was kind of that Marty ball offense all the way up until he got Tagovailoa. Now they've gotten a little bit more dynamic, even with guys like, you know, Julio Jones down there. Pound the rock, throw for the big play over the top. It was very Marty Schottenheimer-esque. Is that what Kirby Smart is doing? I mean, like, okay, you've got running backs. Yes, you can run. That's great. You got 6 yards on the rush, but go ahead and take 76 on the throw over the top. He's got a veteran quarterback in Jake Fromm, and yet a guy who is a second-round talent in the National Football League draft has less than 1,000 yards. There's a disconnect there. Like, if Hardman leaves Kansas City to go play for the Jaguars and his best year is 400 yards – and 5 touchdowns, then the problem is the player.
Yeah.
If Hardman moves into the starting lineup for Sammy Watkins next year and is providing 800 to 1,200 yards with 8 or 10 touchdowns and 16 yards per catch, the problem is at Georgia.
Which is, odd to say, as successful as they've been, that they're, sorry, Georgia, you got a problem, but you can always be better, and if you can't maximize a talent like that, you're not as good as you need to be, and they haven't won a national championship, so maybe there is room to improve.
And just looking at Jake Fromm's stats from his 2 years, he threw for 2,600 yards, granted 24 TDs, but last year 2,750, 30 TDs, 6 INTs, so he was really efficient with the ball. But yeah, when you have big play guys who can go deep and stretch the field, this isn't We're not watching college football where the wishbone is still in vain. Like, there are three schools that are running the ball.
They ran the ball 200 more times than they threw it last year.
That's a year. I had never really given that much thought until I actually started looking at the numbers in front of me. Maybe there is a problem with Kirby Smart, because Jake Fromm was a highly thought of quarterback. You see that he has a lot of the tools to be able to do it. Why he's held in shackles by Kirby Smart is a different issue.
One of the things we try to do is be proactive and not just reactive here in the program if you're new to the festivities here. And that means trying to see over the horizon. That's what general managers and coaches have to do, is see beyond what you can actually see. That's the purpose of that, right? Where do we need to go? And I brought up to a number of people, and we've talked a lot of college football here leading up to the season. And every time I talk to one of the big national poobahs, and I'm like, is this kind of a big year for Kirby Smart? And they're like, what are you talking about? I mean, he won an SEC championship. And he didn't beat Alabama in that championship game. Then he played Alabama for the national title and he lost. Well, they were winning late, but they didn't win, right? And so I got it. I think his resume is fantastic, and no, I wouldn't fire him. But Mark Richt was winning 10 games every year at Georgia, and that wasn't good enough. The closer you get, the more the fans think it's your blockhead decision that kept you from winning the championship. See Eagle fans with Andy Reid. See Chiefs fans after they lose to the Titans in a playoff game. I don't want to hear that Alex Smith just isn't good enough to win those kind of games. Andy Reid screwed it up. He didn't run the ball enough. Never mind the fact that they had the exact same production running the ball in the second half against the Titans that they had in the first half on a per-play basis. They didn't convert the third down completions. They needed to get a new set of downs and hand the ball to Kareem Hunt some more. But nobody wanted to dig that deep. They just wanted one villain. And that day was Andy Reid screwed up by not running the ball, which was wrong, completely wrong on that game. Listen, when I say, is he going to be on the hot seat? I'm asking you to look over the horizon at what Georgia fans are going to think. And they think that they should win a national championship. And if they lose to Florida in Dan Mullen's second year for just a division title, they are going to be pissed. And if they lose to Alabama again, the theme after this year is going to be we're never going to beat Alabama. God forbid they lose to Ed Orgeron and LSU in a conference championship game. But if they don't kick down the door, get back into the playoffs, and then I say win a national championship, he's going to start to be the guy who can't win the big one. I don't agree with that assessment, just as I don't agree with the assessment that somehow Jim Harbaugh is a goof at Michigan. He's won 10 games three of the last 4 years. Do you not remember Rich Rodriguez? Do you not remember Brady Hoke as the head coach at Michigan? But yet there's a feeling, and I think it comes more from Big Ten people and Ohio State people and national people, really. People like Colin Cowherd, who don't know how, I was friends with Colin a long time ago. I'm not anti-Colin Cowherd. But he did just an awful job of being ready to interview Jim Harbaugh and wanting Jim Harbaugh to carry the interview. And he's not going to do it. All right? If you ask him a yes-no question, you're going to get a no. And he's got this odd dramatic pause where he's, I'm assuming, thinking about your actual question. He's not an easy guy to interview and make it be easy like you're talking to Jeff Chedia or Bob Glauber, who's done a million interviews, and they're ready to go. And by the way, cares about how the interview goes. Jim Harbaugh doesn't give a flying fart how the interview's going to go. And so everybody's had these little interactions with Harbaugh, so it's like challenging to because he doesn't just give you layups. But, I mean, everyone, like, I love people who say something. Well, how about Jim Harbaugh? Yeah, Urban Meyer's been really good. Except, you know, trouble kind of follows him everywhere he goes, which everybody freaked out on, which is also 100% true, at least since leaving Utah. At Florida and Ohio State, there's no doubt that there's been plenty of trouble around him. So the guy says things and does things that are out of the ordinary, and then everybody gets negative on him. Listen, Michigan needs to go nowhere but with Jim Harbaugh. The difference is, when I ask that question to the national guys, Kirby Smart plays ball with the media more. Harbaugh's a pain in the ass to the media, so everybody's talking about how, well, you know, the only reason he's still the coach at Michigan is because his last name is Harbaugh. You're a moron. I heard that from an ESPN anchor. And fortunately, since I just called the man a moron, it's good that I can't remember who it was. But he's a moron. That's not the only reason he still has the job at Michigan. He has the job at Michigan because he's doing infinitely better than the previous two boobs. But yes, he does need to beat Ohio State at some point, particularly when Urban Meyer moves on. And by the way, that will haunt Jim Harbaugh for the rest of his life that he did not beat Urban Meyer. That's the kind of guy that he is. Oh, it'll haunt him. Oh, he'll be happy to beat Ohio State. If he wins the next 50, you're talking about a guy who had his kid out playing with a fever in a father-son basketball game. And when I asked him about it, said, oh, yeah, runs and grunts, huh? Surprised you knew about that. I told my son, that shirt, that championship shirt you won, you earned it. We earned it. Don't you ever forget that. It was a freaking father-son tournament. That's the kind of intensity the guy brings. I've talked to guys that have been on a staff. Like, oh, God, yes. That staff is going to turn over all the time because he will wear you out. He is a relentless competitor. And maybe it won't go well at Michigan when it's all said and done. But he's not the problem at Michigan. Urban Meyer and a really good Buckeye team was his biggest problem. If they're out of the way, and a division where he's got to go up against D'Antoni and Michigan State and Franklin and Penn State as well, by the way, it's been a big problem. If he's loafing around on the west side, and only having to get through Wisconsin the last 5 years, it would look very different. Or last 4 years, I guess he's been there.
Yeah, 3 10-win seasons in the last 4 years after having just 2 in the previous 11. Brady Hoke in 2011 and Lloyd Carr in 2006. That's the only ones.
It's a year he needs to do really well. Kurt, I'll get to you. I don't want to cut you short here, so I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back and leave with you next here on the program.
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
By the way, sidebar, can't wait to see what Iowa State to win the Big 12 numbers are. Because I think there may be a wager. Might throw some heavy coinage. Could be maybe as much as a $20 bill going on the Cyclones.
Nice.
To win the Big 12. 913-3810-810. Kurt waiting patiently. Let's talk some college football. You're in the program, Kurt. What's up, buddy?
Not much, guys. Hey, I got to say again, I love being able to drive home and listen to your show.
Hey, amazing. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
It's just, I love the time change. I've always respected your opinion. And that's why, actually, I was calling in, because you talked about something weeks ago related to college football when LSU had their pods, the huge locker room renovations. Yep. And I've had this in my head since then because I'm a transplanted Cornhusker fan. So my question for you, because like I said, I respect your guys' opinion, used to be good. I'm not a fanatic. I'm a fan. And you had talked about how there were teams that you said – that, you know, have the ability or would put the money forward and have the coaching and things like that. A lot of people think that, you know, there's no way that Nebraska will ever come back to the glory days. But do you think with Frost and if they commit the financial things that there is a possibility for Nebraska football to get back up into the, you know, top 5, top 10? Or do you think it's passed us by and with all the facilities and everyone now, the advantages we had basically in the past, what I'm saying, are not what they used to be under Osborne. So do you consider – with the hiring of Frost and everything, do you think we are one of those blue bloods that has the chance to possibly be up? I just wanted your opinion.
Yeah.
I've had it in my head for weeks, so I appreciate your opinion.
You bet, Kurt, and thanks for the call, buddy. I'm gonna let you go, and I'll tell you, yes, I absolutely think Nebraska does. I think you have the passion, you have the fan base, you have the commitment, you have the want to. When they show pods in LSU, you're going to have pods in Nebraska. There's never been anything that has stood in the way financially of Nebraska going out and getting the things that they want to support football. So, yes, I believe you can. Now, is it harder now than it was under Tom Osborne? I'll say yes until somebody else kicks the door down north of the Mason-Dixon line, right? Who are our champions? The only northern champion we have had, national champion, that we have had in college football is Ohio State. One under Urban Meyer till we go back to what? Is it all the way back to Michigan with Brian Griese in 97?
Yeah, probably.
Otherwise, we're talking Florida's and Texas and Oklahoma and Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma once in there. We're talking USC. We're talking about the places that are close to the talent that are winning it. Auburn, Alabama. Who else? I'm not missing anybody up north, right? You got to go all the way back to Michigan. And that was a split. Was that a split title with Nebraska?
Yep.
Yeah.
With Nebraska. So since Nebraska's last title, right, which would eliminate Michigan, only the Buckeyes have won it north of the Mason-Dixon line. If Jim Harbaugh kicks the door down this year, that's a good sign for Nebraska. Even if he doesn't, what Scott Frost has to be is the next Urban Meyer. I asked Urban Meyer 2 summers ago, or last summer now, but 2 American Century Championships ago, when he was there and I had 5 or 6 minutes, this is before all the crap broke at Big Ten Media Day, I said, listen, what do you think? Where is college football right now when it comes to the northern schools? The talent and the population base is growing in the South. Is it still feasible to consistently win in the North? Or is Urban Meyer just that good that you're able to go up there and win it? But it's going to be really hard for anybody else to do it. And he gave a fairly politically correct statement about it. I think great coaches with great support will attract talent. I think you'll be at a slight disadvantage in trying to get warm weather kids to go play cold weather football. But I think cold weather football is getting better. I think Great Lakes football is getting better. I know Kansas City football is getting better. There is an emphasis on it in the high schools. Even with the dwindling numbers, they are – I mean, just look around here. Look at the Olathe and Blue Valley schools. They've got 3 and 4 practice fields. I mean, you know, you think that they're not committed in the state of Kansas to playing better football? I mean, they are. All the uniforms are squeaky, clean, shiny, new. You know, they're committed to playing football. And so I look, can you do it? Hell yes, you absolutely can do it, because Urban Meyer just did it a few years ago. And if Scott Frost is the equal to Urban Meyer, or maybe 95% of Urban Meyer, absolutely. Nebraska can do it. Number one, he's got an Alabama-like situation, I think, where really he's only got to beat Wisconsin to get his way into the championship game and then have a good day that day. Yes, absolutely, Nebraska can return to glory.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, since the AP football poll began in 1950, how many teams have gone wire to wire as number one? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.